This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck, wasn't it?
Liz Mark.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big butts play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you think.
Here's our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard. She can't
Hey, Place to Be Nation, how the hell are you doing? Welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Just Rosero, coming at you live here on this Friday evening. Back in the saddle. It's only been a week, but it feels like it's been years, Scott Criscola, since we last talked.
Good evening, JR. Always a pleasure.
It was a week ago tonight. We were talking to the Mail family, and it feels
That's
like
right.
That was forever ago.
The mailman.
Yes. Richard should sign up the Kendra and West Mail. Love the new Richard and the Mailman.
Richard Mailman. JR, always a pleasure, man. It's nice to be able to carve a little niche for you and I again. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 369 of the Place to Be podcast. And we'll probably get to four bills by Christmas. So.
I know, right? Set us way back. But
it's all good.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, this is the beginning of our, be our new schedule here. So every other Friday, bring a vintage vault your way. And then as we move through the weeks, we'll try and mix in some ad hoc shows as well. But for now, this will be the schedule. So you can pin us here every other Friday with your vintage vaults. And we're here on the Blue Brand, Scott. And it's funny, we split these shows. On when we do Raw, your guys aren't Raw, so all the themes and the music and everything else. I feel like I had nothing to play, nothing to do here on these Blue Brand shows.
I mean, I couldn't even pull out any good, Debbie Boone or the Carpenters because your guy's not even wrestling. So
I know, right?
he does show up, though.
Yes, he is here. So it's been a while since we talked Backlash, right? So that I feel like it's been a long time ago. So it'll be good to get back in the vault.
Yes, because tonight in the big steel box, mentioning your boy. It is an all-American bloodbath.
Hey, what is going on here?
I forgot, are you Catholic? I don't see any burgers
tonight. They'll have the triple all-American.
Yes, not for another 2.5 hours can you have that. If you want to have it at midnight, go right ahead. No.
I ate enough meat for the both of us, Scott Criscola, tonight. I'm good. I'm sure you abstained, but I went to Boneheads tonight, so.
That's quite all right. It's okay. Actually, today I learned something yesterday that technically Good Friday only kind of half counts. I guess you could technically.
I'm going to let you in on a secret.
Yeah.
I don't think it counts at all. You do enough. Look at all the stuff you do. You can go through Dr. G's Facebook page. I don't think God's going to shake his head and kick
That's
your
true.
Ass out of heaven because you had some chicken tenders on a Friday during Lent. I think you'll be okay.
That is true. Did you see anybody have the man eater yet?
No, but
it's only been a couple days.
Just so. Friday, a week from tonight. Mm-hmm. The plan right now is for me, the cowboy, and Mr. Flanagan to go and all tackle it. So
looks good.
We'll keep everyone posted on that. Things a diesel beast. If you're not following Boneheads on Facebook, you should do so just to see the mouth-watering burgers of the month. And this one, this one's a doozy.
Yes.
You might have to make a trip in sometime in April just to try
this. I think I'm – well, it's funny you say that because I goofed with somebody today saying I think I might just – because I wore my my hoodie today. And I said I think I just got to ride in and ride back, if anything, to also get in the raffle for Hall & Oates. So.
Yes, true.
Tonight, inside the Big Steel Box, JR, Judgment Day 2004. I feel this is a show that a lot of people are like, oh, God. Because like, so a lot of people think this middle area of SmackDown in 2004 is unwatchable, dreck. And it really isn't, per se.
It's an interesting. It's a lot of throwing shit at the wall. It's a lot of depleted roster. Hey, we got to find some people fast. So there's a lot of debuts, a lot of they try a lot of different things. It's kind of the stuff that we bitch about like today that they don't do. Like, what the hell? Let's try some new stuff and see what sticks. And I feel like they were kind of doing that during this time period.
Yeah. No, I concur. We get some interesting matchups. And obviously, SmackDown's roster not as deep as it was a year earlier. So you might think there's some fill on here. But it's all totally entirely to your opinion. May 16th. 2004.
By the way, whatever the fill is cannot be worse than your boy taking on Kevin Nash, which is what we were a year ago on this.
Yes,
this
is.
I'll take what we get here.
Yeah, that one. The rematch was not as bad, but that first match was pretty terrible. All right, May 16th, 2004, live from the Staples Center in Los Angeles, California. Our first foray into this building, JR, since I believe Unforgiven 02.
Yeah, that sounds right. Do you think it's a weird show to have in L.A.? Like, Amaya says, because the stigma now when they go to L.A. is like it's a big show.
Right.
It's kind of funny they threw this, I don't know, odd Judgment Day card in Los Angeles.
Yes, and considering the next time we will be in this building will be definitely not a throwaway show by any stretch. Good crowd, though. 18,722, your buy rate 0.42, and your announcers, Michael Cole and Taz. What is our Sutton report tonight, JR?
Well, do you remember the tagline for this show?
Souls will be taken?
So close. Skulls will cry.
Souls will cry.
Yes.
Okay. I remember the poster was like Taker's eyes or something with like his logo in the middle or something like that.
For me, it was When Doves Cry. It's close. One of those. Do you remember the...
yes.
Do you remember the sponsor?
Snickers?
Snickers? Snickers?
Snickers?
No, it was PlayStation.
Oh, okay. PS, I guess still PS2, I suppose.
Yeah, I feel like we've done this before, but yeah, probably PS2. Yeah, I don't
probably
think it was PS3 yet.
Nah, PS3 was what, 2009?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. All right, so what do we got?
Championship roll call. Still our WWE champions, Eddie Guerrero.
Mm-hmm.
United States champion, still John Cena. We have new tag team champion, Scott.
What?
Charlie Haas and Rico.
What?
Defeated the dream team of Rikishi and Scotty Tuhati on the 422 SmackDown in Kelowna, British Columbia. And thank God.
I'm sure you're thrilled.
Oh, thank God. That nightmare is over.
Yeah.
Cruiserweight champion. You know what? We'll save that one.
Yeah,
because it's way too much to get into here.
Part of the game.
We have a new GM, Scott, because Paul Heyman on the draft was drafted to Raw and quit the company on TV anyway, in kayfabe. And there was a little concern about one of the top stars, Kurt Angle, starting to get some numbness. And they're worried that his neck is going to need another surgery and he may have to retire. He was in rough shape again. And it was like, oh, we just went through this a year ago and we're back at it. And so they decided to take him off TV for a bit and make him the new GM of SmackDown.
What'd you think of that?
I remember the time it felt really weird because we hadn't really had like an active guy like that take that role yet. We've just had real straight-up authority figures.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting. But, you know, if we kept him on TV, it was better than him just disappearing for 3 months like he did in 2003.
Right.
And, of course, they wrote him off by having Big Show chokeslammed him. Like off a balcony onto the floor. And remember they did that whole shot where he was like, his leg was all bent and he was bleeding on the floor or whatever.
Mangled and
And then he comes out as
by
GM.
A bus. Yes.
So insta feud there with him as GM. He kind of has his guy to rant and rave against. But yeah, no, I was fine with it. I mean, like I said, it was kind of jarring at first, but once you accepted that he couldn't wrestle, this was the next best. SmackDown had reached 248 episodes, Velocity 102, and we've had 97 TNA pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. Judgment Day Heat, we saw Mark Jindrak defeat Funaki.
Mm. Jindrak was working on a gimmick.
Was he?
Yeah, wasn't he the...
narcissist one or whatever?
Yeah, Reflection of Perfection.
Was that that?
With Teddy? I thought. Well, if the finisher was the Mark of Excellence, I'm kind of guessing.
You're the Mark of Excellence.
I know I am. But I thought it was 2004. Makes sense.
Fucking Triple H Mark of Excellence.
that's true, too. Now, okay, so there's our heat. All right, why don't we dive in? Do we have anything else? No, we're good. We begin with a six-man or a tag team match that directly relates to the draft, because one of these two teams was moved, including one guy.
Welcome to Judgment Day, when doves cry.
Here's your host, J.R. Cidio D'Amato.
What will happen when this man from Long Island eats a dove?
With his tie-dye shirt.
I saw D'Amato SummerSlam. I mean, not SummerSlam, WrestleMania.
Yeah. Came we down. Will see D'Amato at SummerSlam.
Yeah, came to Boneheads. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, good to see him. I'll be seeing him a couple times this summer.
We had the delicious.
I should be seeing him in June.
We had the delicious breakfast. It was all him. The breakfast at Tiffany's Wings, and I've been hooked since, because a few weeks ago my wife got the chicken and waffles, and that's the sauce they give you. Mm-hmm. And then that's what we split tonight, because it's really, really good.
What are the breakfast at Tiffany's?
It's like a maple syrup kind of sauce. Oh. They've had them the whole time. I'd never had them. I don't.
Oh, that's dangerous. I will definitely be.
They are really good. The chicken and waffles are fucking delicious. I'm like all on board now. Mark Poirier was the only person I know that got them. Before this.
Yeah. But your handsome son got a look at the nachos for the first time.
He was sitting there chilling the whole time. It was good. And daughter loves going. It's candied bacon and maple sauce breakfast at Tiffany's. Mm.
Oh yeah, we've always seen it, huh? But that always you always look at that and you're like, that flavor on chicken.
Oh, it's. So
I mean,
good.
Chicken and waffles, but now, yeah.
Well, yeah. Definitely. So the chicken and waffles, they pretty much just give you a huge waffle and then like six or seven naked boneless tenders, and then you just dip it in the sauce.
Oh my god, that sounds unbelievable.
It's really good. It's really good. That's what I had tonight.
Down on the farm as well, Sunday, as always?
Yeah, down on the farm. We had the mac and cheese. We had the war pigs.
Nah, I love the war pigs.
The new one, the cowboy and I discovered a few weeks ago, the barbecue teriyaki. I forgot the name of it. Those are good.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had a good group. And
excellent.
Fun as always.
Excellent, excellent. All right. Two guys who look like, at this point, they were eating a lot of down on the farm.
Yes.
We're drafted from SmackDown to Raw, but give us the background on how this tag team match got together.
Well, on 4-8, Booker T turned on his tag team partner, RVD, during a match. On 4-22, Paul Heyman returned as GM for one night only. He ripped RVD, said he who had just lost a match to Booker, telling him he was disgracing the legacy of ECW. As he was ragging on RVD, the Dudleys came down to join the festivities. Heyman ripped into them as well, telling them they had become a watered-down caricatures. In response, they turned to RVD and beat him down, officially turning heel. A week later, RVD saved Eddie Guerrero from a Dudley beatdown. On 5-6, RVD teamed with Rey Mysterio to beat the Dudleys, and a week later, a tag team rematch was announced on the pay-per-view. That same night, D-Von defeated RVD in a singles match. What did you think of the Dudley heel turn?
At this point, I mean, why not? I mean, you know, there's really nothing else for him to do. They had really been beaten down as, and not beaten down literally, but like just beaten down creatively as baby faces on Raw. Why not? You know, I mean, there's really nothing else for him to do.
Yeah, I liked it. I was they needed it bad. And 03 was kind of weird with them, and 04 early on, they were kind of doing the same thing again. Like you said, they needed the change of scenery. And I like to put them back with Paul. Even though they're not quite there yet, they're basically kind of hinting at it. Because he wasn't with them here, right?
No, they came out alone.
So I thought it was good. I thought they were kind of embracing the ECW stuff, and it was a needed change. Because we had that brief like heel tease in 03, but they didn't really go heel. So I thought this was it was time to do something new. And I thought RVD and Ray, it's a cool team, and they work well together. Like, it's pretty fun,
right.
But it's kind of sad because it's like,
I know.
This is what these guys are doing now.
Right.
Because they're not really, I feel like they're not positioned as like main event guys teaming up. Like, it doesn't feel like a super team. It feels like just like two mid-card guys teaming up because they have nothing to do.
Right.
You know, it doesn't feel like Rock and Undertaker teaming up. It feels like, you know, Billy Gunn and Road Dogg. Nothing to do, let's team them up.
Yeah.
More than like, oh my God, the super team, Rey Mysterio and RVD. So good ECW feels this match, both with histories as well as putting four veterans out there to just kind of do their thing. The Dudleys take control early, and they work over RVD a bit. Still sad watching RVD in this role, like I said. Him and Ray fly around making a comeback and take advantage of some miscommunication. Dudleys use a heel double teamwork to regain control. RVD wriggles free and tags Ray. Ray was still awesome at this point. A lot of spring in his step, a lot of speed. He goes at a quick pace but gets stopped short by Bubba Ray's hot shot. Very good heat building here. Simple, using false tags with the ref's distraction. Ray makes a good comeback, including a near fall and a moonsault. You get very hot down the stretch with good near falls and a very hot finish with a 619 and 5-star for the clean win. What did you think of that? Did you like the
yes.
At least win it clean?
Yeah, definitely. I think it needed to happen. I don't know how far this feud was going to go, so why have any weird chicanery at the end?
Right.
No, I was fine with the clean finish.
Solid opener, I thought. Four guys just doing their thing. They don't have a lot of direction. And I don't know if you agree with me, but I thought all four. When you look at this card, I feel like all four guys could be used much more effectively elsewhere than just being thrown
in
the opening tag. I mean, when you look at the lack of depth, and then these guys are just kind of here in this random tag match.
Well, yeah. I mean, as we continue on tonight, you're going to – I mean, there's a couple of slots on this card that –
Well, I mean, the tag title match alone to me is the, which we'll get.
Well,
to.
That, yeah, that's a mess. And then you got a debut.
As stale as the Dudleys felt as champions, but at least maybe being on a new brand, being heels, they could have just maybe been closer to that picture than what we had going on.
No, it definitely. And you know, we got a weird debut, and then this bizarre cruiser feud we'll talk about. I mean, there were definitely spaces here where, and this match was Jesus. You know, almost 15 and a half minutes. I mean, you know, you probably could have spread this out a little bit, maybe cut this time in half, and have two matches involving these guys doing something else. So, yeah, I mean, it was, you definitely have a lot of talent here. And let me ask you this. We've documented very well here on the show about RVD's, whatever these, you know, these first, what, 2.5 years he's been with the company. Do you almost feel like Ray is the one that should be feeling like kind of half squeezed here? I mean, he's probably the hotter guy.
Yeah,
right
I wouldn't disagree with that.
And you know?
That just tells you how far RVD's fallen.
Yeah.
There's only one thing that sums that up.
When RVD cries.
When RVD gets high.
420. Okay.
When Ray flies.
So Ray and RVD get the win over the Dudleys. Big heel turn, and immediately they lose. What'd you think of that? I mean, immediately
yeah,
big
fine.
Heel turn, and then well, whatever. Who cares at this point? Really.
Yeah, I don't think losses matter to the Dudleys at this point. Whatever. I mean, it's not, even though I said Ray and RVD is not like any kind of super team, they're still good enough to wear. If you're losing to them, it's not like a huge deal.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it was a good match. Like, the crowd was into it, and RVD and Ray are fun, and they'll team up off and on throughout the year. So I think as they go, and we'll see if my memory's correct on this, as they go, they start to feel like a bigger deal because they don't always team up, but then they come together and have pretty good matches, if I remember correctly. So I like the fact that they're just kind of friends that team up when they need to. But here, it just feels like they're throwing them together. But I feel like as the year unfolds, they start to feel more like that, where they gang up when they have to. And I thought that was a good use of them.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Would you have turned RVD heel too and it's like gone? I know the ECW nostalgia wasn't quite there yet, but what if they had gone like Heyman reunites the band kind of thing?
Well, if anybody could have used a breath of fresh air, it was it most definitely was him. I wouldn't have objected to it. Kind of going back to that kind of suave, yeah, half, you know, token the line there, like he did in 90, you know, 97, 98 when he was crazy over 99 as TV champion. In ECW, I think they could have maybe attempted to kind of bring that back. But like you said, the ECW nostalgia doesn't totally kick in for another couple of years. But still, I think you could have got something out of that. He could have had this little faction of ECW guys. And I think if anything, a heel turn would most definitely have refreshed RVD even more than the Dudleys needed it.
Sheryl Crow always said, a change will do you good.
Change will do you good when doves do cry. And
Ray could have been the perfect guy to turn on. Because like you said, the crowd still really is into him. He's got a lot of juice still. Mm-hmm. So if you have RVD turn on him and then go with Heyman and the Dudleys, then you have to, and Ray has to fight him off. Like, that could have been a pretty good feud. Heel RVD against face Ray.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a great idea.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
It's a great idea. I think because, I mean, Ray, I think, still has a lot of juice, and we'll see that on the next SmackDown show in a couple months, that he definitely has plenty of juice left. He hasn't gotten burned out, and 2003 wasn't bad for him. So if anything, he's getting pulled down by RVD, which is kind of unfortunate. I think a heel turn would have definitely done RVD some good. So, but they get the win anyways, baby faces, Rey Mastrio, as someone would say, and RVD defeat the Dudleys in our opener, which is a unbelievable 15 minutes and 19 seconds. Wow, that's long.
Maybe yeah. The official theme of SmackDown in 2004.
Yes, for everybody. I'm going to let you talk about our next segment before the because this is all you right here. This whole little piece leading up to our next match is all you, so why don't you go right in.
All right, so Kurt Angle comes out, our GM, led out by Luther Reigns. And I was thinking today, because it was getting ready in the show, and I always hear, you know, Taz in my head, Luther Reigns! And I was thinking, wow, they really like that name Reigns to give it to, you know, Roman Reigns. They brought it back. It's like they loved it so much they gave it to Luther, and he bombed, and they've been holding it for, like, the right guy since, but...
No, we're getting very close now. Hopefully not, but so, hopefully they're not 0-2.
So Kurt's in a wheelchair. He's got the cast on his leg, and it feels like Dr. Evil or something in the, you know, getting wheeled out by. And I liked it. I thought it worked well. You get the bald head and the suit on.
That's all you, man. I thought it was all you. Because the minute I saw that, I thought to myself, Vince 98.
And he's all pissed off. And, yeah. You know, bitches about Eddie cheating and his leg injury, rants against Los Angeles. He's all fucking bitter. He calls out Tori Wilson. He's going to punish her because she led him. Or it was something, right? Wasn't he saving her? Whatever the hell the thing was.
He was saving her from Big Show, and that is what led to Big Show chokeslamming him off the staircase, yeah.
So he blames her for his leg breaking, and he threatens to fire her if she loses the next match. I mean, just time filler on what's, I don't want to say a weak card, but a light card. And as we'll see, because of the matches and the guys involved, they had to kill some time. But I thought it was good character building for Kurt. Right. Was this the one? This isn't the one where he was on the big box, right?
Oh, yeah.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, where he wheels it down and he comes up from the top.
Right, okay, I thought so. All right.
Yeah, and I'm thinking this is, and he's got the red, white, and blue wheelchair. I'm thinking this is JR all the way.
Great stuff. Luther Reigns! No,
Luther Reigns!
It was good heel, yeah, just heel, like Dr. Evil. It's pretty much what I would, or
Vince 98.
What the hell's his name? No, not Vince. Well, yeah, Vince 98.
What?
To take to relevant pop culture, I'm thinking of Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget.
Matt Rattel is not the only one listening to this show. Oh my God! Today I had to chuckle. On a side note, before I had a detour for a minute. We're in our encoding work area at work today, and the Hall of Fame was on the stream today, and he's the lumpy silverback's next to me doing some Yes show, and. I'm doing something else, and I look up, and this is when the Bushwhackers come out, and all I see with Luke with it, is it right? Was it Luke with the crutches?
Or no,
was it
Butch. Behind, it was Butch.
Butch had the crutches, and all I did, and I look at him, and all I remember is what you said.
He did. They walked the same.
They looked like, oh my God, two fucking lumpy.
I mean,
gnomes.
Butch is literally Rotella in like 30 years.
I could not stop laughing. He's looking at me like, "What are you laughing at?" Never mind. It's just. Oh God, it was classic. All right, so
next,
next.
They should make a hybrid with this and his song. It kind of sounds similar.
No, we're not. That is fine.
Yeah.
No, we're not.
So he definitely so it's a Southern Caribbean Cruise. It's a Southern Caribbean Chris Cruz. He definitely had a Dr. Claw, Dr. Evil kind of feel going on.
And a red, white, and blue, and of course, you know, Cole mentioned it like 11 times.
Right.
blue wheelchair as well. So, but yeah, like you said, he goes on a whole rant, pissing and moaning. He said he hopes that the open earthquake swallows this whole city whole.
Yeah, very angry, very very pissed off.
Yeah, and Tori Wilson comes out, and he gets pissed off at her, saying, "You cost me my career because I had stuck up for you, and this is what I get." And Big Show chokeslams me. So, if you don't win your next match tonight, you are fired. Tell us what that match is, JR. Who is she facing?
Face of Luther Reigns, Dawn Marie,
yes.
The never ending feud. So
oh,
back at it from 2003.
Like 16 months old.
2002, 2003. And, but they kind of don't reference, like they do, but they don't. They kind of
right.
just make it like it's just new.
Yeah.
Dawn's Kurt's mercenary, apparently. Every GM has one. Sloppy as usual. Both work hard, but it's just not there. It's like, how many times do we have to see it to understand that it's never going to work? Yeah. Way too long with Dawn in control. The best spot was a Dawn hitting a leg drop on the floor, and then we get a wardrobe malfunction from her that makes up for everything. Get her exposed ass and thong.
Yes.
Tori gets a backslide of all things for a win. Nothing going on here. Just kind of a.
No, it's terrible.
Was it Officer Barb Brady? Move along. Nothing to see here. That's pretty much what this is.
Nothing to see here. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, her pants rip, so you see her finely toned ass and thong for the last like
this
2 minutes.
Is, well, one thing that would help the women's division here.
Yes. Yes, they should all have their pants ripped off. they should all wrestle in thongs. So, all right. So there you go. Tori Wilson wins, saves her job, and let's move on.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we have a debut, and we had, if I remember correctly, JR, we had endless vignettes.
Oh yeah,
up
lots of
to this as we have a debut. Taking on another guy who's just kind of floating around aimlessly, wondering why he still has a job. Tell us who the debut is, sir.
Developmental wrestler Kevin Fertig played Mordecai.
Woo!
Spelled Mordecai, not like Mordecai, that stupid crap movie that came out this year.
Yes, with Johnny Depp.
Fertig competed on the indie scene as 7 and signed with WWE in 2001. He continued to use a 7 gimmick during his time at OVW, where he joined the stable Disciples of Sin. He was called up to SmackDown in late April, given the gimmick of a religious zealot, Mordecai. In a series of vignettes, he claimed that he saw sin everywhere, and he looked and that God had chosen him to eradicate it. It was an interesting idea. Mordecai had an interesting look, decked out entirely in white, carrying a crucifix to the ring. He would pray before his matches as well, so he's kind of doing a Criscolo gimmick here. The gimmick was short-lived, and despite a tease of a feud at a very high level, the gimmick would be abandoned in July, and Fertig returned to OVW. They teased fused with Undertaker, with Eddie Guerrero.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed like something big was going to happen, but never did.
Nope. And he, in a setup match here, he takes on another floating aimless guy in this brand, Scotty Too Hotty.
And Mordecai, by the way, is trained by Danny Davis and Nick Dinsmore, started training in 98. So the only reason he really sticks out in my head, I remember, what was Mike's son's name, the youngest one that we used to
Mark.
Watch the pay-per-views with? Mark.
Mark.
Was the one, he was a chubbier guy with glasses back in the day. I don't know if it's still
Max?
Yeah, it was Max.
Max. He's the second one, yeah.
I remember he was like all into Mordecai. He kept asking who would win a three-way with like Undertaker, Kane, and Mordecai.
It's Max because Max loved Kane. So
yeah,
it was
all into
it was...
that. For some reason, that vividly sticks out of my head, and me being like, I don't know, who cares?
Who cares?
Scotty right back to his job under the stars role, coming off big hot tag team title run.
Yeah.
New gimmick, a little bit cartoonish. Seems set for Taker based on the look and entrance, basically like an anti-Taker. We'll talk about that in a minute. Mordecai very aggressive, off the bell. Scotty gets a short flurry, he goes to the worm, but Mordecai blocks and slings him to the ropes and then finishes with a razor's edge. That was a good time to bring that move back. It fit his gimmick with being a crucifix bomb, basically. Hadn't seen it in a while. Really quick squash. What did you think about having it on pay-per-view? I kind of didn't mind it because it kind of brought like the old-school card feel to it. It didn't feel... sometimes you get these matches and you're like, why didn't they just do this on TV? But I thought this was a pretty effective squash, and it got them over a little bit to the crowd.
Yeah, I'm watching it today, and I'm thinking it should have been a bigger squash. I mean, Scotty, except for setting up the worm, I think he should have really dominated him. I think the problem with this gimmick, I mean, Kevin Fertig is a normal size wrestler, good shape and everything, but he didn't have that like, he wasn't tall. He wasn't imposing. Mm-hmm. Like, it was almost like Undertaker under Faker. Like, if he ended up getting in a feud with Taker, he would have looked ridiculous.
So that's why I think he would have been better suited maybe for something else outside of Taker. Like, he could have still done the Zella gimmick and just been like more like a cult leader, not. And that, I mean, he wasn't completely anti-Taker. I mean, he kind of had the look to it because he was just like the opposite. He had all the white on and antithesis of Undertaker. But yeah, I mean, a feud with Eddie, I don't know, that might have been fast-tracking it. There's probably other guys he could have feuded with.
Somebody already got fast-tracked to Eddie, as we'll mention.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there are other guys he could have feuded with. I mean, Eddie would have maybe made sense just if he was like a religious zealot and you played up Eddie's addiction stuff and maybe went that route, but you just done that with Kurt and you can really do that again. I don't know. It was an interesting gimmick. I'm not sure where else it would have fit.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, at least this match was, you know, mercifully short, just a couple seconds over 3 minutes, so it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
I dug the look. I thought the long white hair and he had a good glare. I didn't really have a problem with it. I just
did he ever really state his like purpose? I don't remember. Honestly,
not really. Like, I don't know. I thought maybe he'd have cut a promo after the match. I thought he did, but then I watched it today and he didn't. I agree with you in that point, JR. I think if he had defined what he was instead of a taker that wears white and is about 8 inches shorter, I think maybe we would have gotten some traction with it. But I feel like it was just this random, mysterious guy who comes in, does this weird shit, has a cool looking staff, beats a burned out
representing the Tea Party,
heatless ex tag team guy in 3 minutes and we move on. I don't know if the roles were more defined, maybe. But again, I mean, when you're debuting a new gimmick, you kind of got to give it some time. So maybe they didn't want to rush it, but. I'm going to talk more about Mordecai in a couple matches because to me it opens up a larger question about Taker, but more on that when we get to his match. There was nothing wrong with this. As for your original question, I'll take squashes anywhere because, I mean, the number one thing you have to you try to do besides selling shows with main events is character development. So anytime you get an opportunity to get a character developed and over – good or bad, that's what you do. That's your job. So no, I have no problem with putting the squash here at all. I think that's what they needed to do. I'm surprised they fit it with a 15-minute opener, but and matches longer later. But you know, they got it. They got it in, and I have no problem with it. Not at all.
All I have to say to Scotty is one thing.
I'm gonna be a fireman. Go back to Maine. So, all right. Next up, our first title match of the evening, JR. The blue belts are on the line. The WWE Tag Team Championships. Your champions, as you mentioned earlier, Charlie Haas and Rico, who defeated your favorite team, the team we just saw one half of them buried to jobber status, and Rikishi, taking on this great number one contender team. What is this? What's the background on this? Give us the background, because I don't know what the hell's going on. Yes.
A lot. No, not really. Charlie Haas and Rico teamed to defeat Rikishi and Scotty on the 422 SmackDown from Kowloon's, like we mentioned before. Mm-hmm. On 415, right. Charlie Haas and Rico squared off in a match and ended in a quick countout as Haas was freaked out by Rico's gay tendencies. A week later, Rico was revealed as Haas's mystery partner for Charlie Haas from Indiana. A week later, Rico was revealed as Haas's mystery partner for his tag title shot. The Odd Couple would win the belts from Scotty and Rikishi. On 5/13, Hardcore Holly defeated Charlie Haas in a singles match. It was announced that Holly would be teaming with Billy Gunn to take on Rico and Haas at the pay-per-view. Holly and Gunn had been teaming on Velocity and had gelled pretty well as a team and had this surly veteran feel to them. So a lot to digest in that. That's a loaded fun fact.
Yes, you guys are hot on Velocity. Let's get a touch.
Guys are tearing up Velocity. Well, it kind of had that New Age Outlaws throwback feel to it. You know, I was like kind of, all right, these guys got nothing going on. I remember the Outlaws came together on like Shotgun or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So it kind of had this, neither guy had anything going on. Billy Gunn's a team of these. The king of these teams, right? There's nothing going on. All right, let's find him a new partner. And they always kind of click. Like, I actually didn't mind it. Like, I kind of liked them as the angry, pissed off veterans, just like mad at the world, like mad at these guys, mad at everyone that they're held back and
pissed off and old and beating the shit out of people.
Held back. Yeah, right. Held back.
Holly never gets a break.
You know. He just had a title match 6 months earlier, so whatever. So,
Weird Champs. I thought, as odd as it was, it's better than a couple teams. It's better than Scotty and Rikishi. It's better than Rico and Rikishi from 2002. Better than a lot of different things. Rico worked hard on the gimmick. Decent use of Haas. I thought Haas deserved better, but at least they're kind of let him go out there and work still. Challenges, like we said, the angry veteran asshole team. Feels like SmackDown's just kind of tossing and mashing everything together, like we said, trying to find anything that would click. Right. Rico doing some really effeminate mannerisms, lots of histrionics,
yes.
Old man frustrated by Rico's mind games. They refuse to tag in. They're getting all flustered. Pretty much just a comedy match. Holly uses a distraction to deck Haas from behind to take control. Billy and Holly work some stiff offense. They grind Haas down. Rico makes a crisp comeback. And it looks pretty good when he's not being goofy out there. He had a lot of good offense. Solid closing sequence where Rico hits Holly with a super kick to block the Alabama Slam. And Rico and Haas, I thought, had pretty good teamwork. It's an interesting match. Like, it's better than I thought, but I mean, the tag division is just fucking sad when you look at it. I mean, this is our tag title match, but I didn't mind Rico and Haas as a unit. Like, I thought they had pretty good offense. I think it gets kind of, it becomes like jokey and panned because of what Rico's gimmick was at the time. But I mean, that's a gimmick that's been around for a long time. I mean, he's basically just doing whatever, like Adrian Street. Like, that's all he was doing. So, And he was a great worker. So, and they played it off as mind games. Like, they played it off like he knew what he was doing, almost like early Goldust as well.
Right.
So, I mean, it's at times a little weird and uncomfortable to watch, like Holly and Billy being all homophobic and weird, but this is one of those gimmicks.
Angry, so, grizzled.
Yeah, right.
There's
always a pizza place they can go work for.
So. Yes. They make a lot of money, though, even when closed. But, yeah, I think that, this is kind of a mess. I would have put the Dudleys here and let Ray and RVD do something else. I would have had RVD and Ray in a singles match. Like you said, turn RVD heel with them. Have Heyman kind of stiff arm, you know, Kurt and him kind of on the same page as heels. Get the Dudleys an automatic title match here.
Against Haas and Rico, would you have... them against Holly and Gunman actually been pretty fun. I mean, it wouldn't have been no titles on the line, but...
Yeah. It would have been pretty stiff, beating the shit out of each other. But otherwise, yeah, this match is average at best. Nothing really going on here. Yeah, this is where you finally see that we're two pairs of tag titles really, because the tag situation on Raw, we'll talk more about that at the next show, next vault. The tag situation on both shows at the moment is not stellar. Raw, it's a little bit better, but here on SmackDown, it's absolutely dreadful.
I think Charlie Haas. Yeah. And I think it's very clear that Vince just went to Holly after those title matches and just said,
"Your boyfriend Lance Armstrong."
Did that win the 90s? Was that in the 90s or the 2000s? That song.
Probably like 2002.
I usually wrong.
Guess. Let me see. Guess.
Is it Wood Do You Good or Will? Wood.
97. Oh. Was it in the buried amongst the 67 Green Day songs in the tournament? I'm not sure.
Change or Do You Good was also along with Every Day Is a Winding Road.
If it makes you happy. I get a little bit. Oh, God. The Globe Sessions, right? Wasn't that album?
The album's name was Sheryl Crow.
Oh, okay. The Globe Sessions was probably after that. Don't ask me how I know that. So there you go. Charlie Haas and Rico retain their WWE Tag Team Championship belts, the blue belts. All right. Our next title match. You were all over this feud, too, though.
I'm ready. The song I'm ready starts. I'm going to send in the clowns because this fucking thing is circling the bull. I mean, not just the show or the card. I mean, the program. Just look at like a year ago where SmackDown was, and then now. And it's just so depleted and empty. And it's like, this is our Cruiserweight title match.
Just not good. Not good. Give us the background on our Cruiserweight championship match.
On 4/29, Chavo Guerrero Jr. issued an open challenge to anyone in the world that had not yet been beaten. The next week, Jacqueline answered the challenge and defeated Chavo to win the title. The next week, Jackie lost a non-title match to Chavo Sr., now gone by the name Chavo Classic. The rematch was set for the pay-per-view, but the stipulation added that Chavo would have to have his hand tied behind his back. And Sky, this would also be Jackie's final pay-per-view appearance. After dropping the title here, she was released in June, as creative no longer had any ideas for her, such as winning the Cruiserweight title.
Yes.
After leaving, she would bounce around the indie scene, including a pair of stints in TNA. Her final record is 1-7. She was one, well, I don't know.
I just checked that. Yeah, it's actually 2-7.
Well, or do we have that win wrong? When did she win at SummerSlam? The hell was that?
When was she ever at SummerSlam?
She lost in 98 in SummerSlam.
Right. She had any other one? 99? No.
Who the fuck knows? Anyway.
2000?
Whatever. She's either 1-7 or 2-6. Whatever. No matter. So, yeah. I mean, all the titles are just jokes. Bring them all to me! I've got to play the song! Give me Jackie! Give me Chavo Sr. Give me Charlie Haas and Rico. Mordecai, all the clowns. Give me Doink, bring him too. Dink, wink, pink. Slink. Martella.
I could see him having Judy Collins in the limo.
I like
hey, Claire, have her sing that song again.
The Krusty the Clown version is much better, but all of them. Just pile them all in the fucking clown car and ride them out here to SmackDown. But meaningless. All the divisions just feel meaningless on the undercard here. Jackie won the Cruiserweight title back on SmackDown. Chavo's got his hand behind his back. A lot of goofy stuff. And it's sad when you consider the roster. I think a lot of those good Cruiserweights we saw at Mania like are still here. I don't know what the fuck they're doing. I mean, this company had the Ultimate Dragon on contract, and he never even had a title feud on pay-per-view. You know, the best part of all of this is Classic's swagger on the outside. Chavo uses one-arm power offense, hits the post, gives Jackie an opening. She hits a low blow, gets rolled up for a near fall. Classic unties Chavo's hand, and he fakes being tied, uses Classic's diversion, uses both arms to take over. And despite the stupidity of all this, I thought it was pretty good heel work by the Chavos. And Chavo cheats and wins. I thought Classic was really the only redeeming part of this whole mess, and the Cruiserweight title is just a waste. Like, they didn't need the title to do this. They could have just had Jackie beat Chavo in a match, and they could have the Cruiserweight title. With all the other guys you saw on the roster, you got Kidman still, even Shannon Moore, Tajiri, Akio, you know, Sato, Tanaka, Kato, they're all there. I mean, why are they not being utilized in just a better way? And we talked about
Cruiserweight title match, Rey Mysterio and Sato!
Well, yeah, even Mysterio. You know, it's like, what the hell? Oh, they got a lot of guys that could be using, and they got this disaster.
Send in.
There you go.
The clowns.
It's better than Joan Collins over the hell saying the other one.
Joan Collins. Judy. Anyway, Vince had both both of them in the limo. Yeah, this is a mess. There's a perfect spot here. Like I said, if you want to break up that opening match, you put, you know, the Dudleys maybe in the title match. And then Mev, Ray, and RVD. I mean, I have RVD go for the Cruiser title. Who gives a shit at this point with him? You know? Because this is just... And it's not a knock on Chavo, really. I mean, it's okay for Chavo to be champion, but...
Nah.
And this is just ridiculous.
They have a lot better people on the roster than him that they could use in this. I mean, even... was London back yet? And Kendra, I don't know if those guys are back yet, but I know he's coming back.
I don't think
soon.
So. No.
They have a lot of guys that they could have found and used much more than the shitbag they have going on here.
Yeah.
And I mean, Jackie's fine, but Cruiserweight fucking champion, Jacqueline. I mean, she was fine when she had her, you know, tits out and doing great heel work with Mero and everything, but I mean, this is just... No, I like
it. It's falling out everywhere.
Although I like Jackie when they used to throw her in the women's feuds in 01. And so, I mean, she was fine.
Yeah.
Didn't need to be in this. I know her whole thing was fighting men. I mean, maybe she was Miss Texas and then she did it in WCW too, but... I didn't care for the title being involved, that's all.
Oh, it was clearly nothing more than a prop. I think we all... I mean,
which is sad, though, when you look at the roster they have.
That,
I mean,
sucks.
That's what makes it tough. It's like when...
I do disagree slightly that I don't have an issue with Chavo as champion. I mean, he's a good heel. Mm. I mean, obviously, we saw just 2 months earlier at WrestleMania the myriad of cruiserweights, and then half of them they got rid of or went off and did something less interesting. And I think that's the bad part, but... putting the title in here is just.
I mean,
ridiculous.
I don't mind Chavo, but I feel like there's so many better options than him at this point that even he was like a letdown to be champion.
Yeah, well, it didn't bother me, but I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of options, but I was fine with him as a heel, and at least his status with the title kind of upgrades when we get to the next SmackDown show. But Yeah, I had no problem with it. I had no problem with him being champion. This is just a piece of trash. So, so Chavo regains the cruiserweight championship and moves on, and Jacqueline is bye-bye. Is Classic stick around, or is he pretty much done after this? He sticks around, right?
Yeah, I think he's at our next show, and then I think we'll talk about that. Remember, he has all the issues. Remember, he gets in the big fight at the Cauliflower Alley Club and everything.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. So there we go. So, all right. I think it's a good spot here to take a break. Let's kind of cleanse ourselves of the last three pieces of crap, because our last three matches are all actually very good and good feuds and actually good matchups. So JR, so far this show is incredibly top heavy, and that's good. It kind of needed to be because the undercard's kind of crappy. So more from Los Angeles coming up on the other side of the break. But first, this.
A whole new break! That's what he said when he made the new one.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at placetobenation.com. You can check out myself as Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews, our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews, and WWE Network live watches. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including the main event, featuring a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, WrestleChat.net's Still Real to Us podcast with Jeff Peck, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on what we should be excited about in the world of wrestling today. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We featured The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, as well as the twice-weekly Bauer Show, The Kings of Sport, featuring live audio wrestling's godfather, Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., often visited by special guests from inside the world of sports, as well as the NBA Team Podcast with Adam Murray and Andrew Reich for the deep dive into the world of pro hoops. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats' RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net for their support.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber lover.
The Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on Earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
Huh. All right, Scott, that's our mantra for the second half here. Every little thing's going to be all right.
Yes.
After a very shaky undercard, I think we're set up, hopefully, for a strong finish. But let's talk about the website that always finishes strong, and that's PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. A whole lot going on here, Scott Criscullo, including the launch of a brand new tournament.
Yes.
The 90s tournament is in our rearview mirror, and after Mania, we decided it was time to kick off another one. And we're sticking in the realm of music, as we often do here at PlaceToBeNation.com, but this one has a different little bit of a slant to it. It is PTBN's greatest wrestling theme song tournament. So a little mix up, a little switcheroo.
I feel like you and I have talked about this tournament since like episode 2.
Well, because I feel like we did one on the old message board back in the day.
Yeah.
But this one's a little bit more on Facebook too.
Yeah.
This one's more juiced up. So we had a committee pulled together and we started just nominating songs and we ended up at 292 songs. So we took the bottom 48 and put them into groups of four in a play-in round. 12 will survive the play-in round and give us a feel of 256, and from there it'll be a straight tournament all the way to the end. So only one pool round here. And those 12 play-in matchups, 48 songs, are all up right now at PlaceToBeNation.com. We're going to leave those open for a few days, and then we'll kick off round one and start moving through this thing, the greatest wrestling theme song. Now, you should keep in mind a few things, right? So not just quality of the song,
impact.
As a whole, yeah, you want the impact of the song. You want the fit with the wrestler. So, yeah, Cult of Personality is an awesome song. But how does it fit with Punk? It fit very well, obviously. But you know what I'm saying? Like, so it shouldn't just be, oh, we like this song. Because we really struggled with should we include real mainstream songs or not. And we ended up doing it because they're important. But you should really factor in the fit of the wrestler, the... you know, what it added to their character, the pop it would get, the you know, how well known it was. Like, all that stuff needs to factor into a great wrestling theme. It's not just, is it a good song? So, let's quickly go through the play-in matchup, Scott, and you can, we'll cast our votes here. So, matchup number one, four songs in each. We got to pick one. We have D'Lo Brown's Danger at the Door, Evan Bourne's Born to Win, Bert the Fay, Sweet Love and Arms, sung by our friend Dontown Bruno, and Smoking Guns, Smoking. They're, you know, usual theme. Who do you like here of these four?
Who did you say after D'Lo?
Evan Bourne, Bertha Fay, and the Smoking Guns.
I think I like D'Lo.
Yep, D'Lo is currently well ahead. He's got a nice lead here, so looks like he'll be moving into the tournament. All right, next up we have Alex Riley, Say It to My Face, which is his one he has now. Dan Severn, my personal favorite. The Red Rooster. And the song that was shared by the Heavenly Bodies and the New Foundation. I mean, how do you hate that song? It's the best song ever.
It is.
Especially when you got Andy walking around with a fake mustache.
Yes. Making them Christmas cookies. Yeah, I have to take Severin.
All right. Well, he's got a fighting puncher's chance right now. Alex Riley in the lead. But let's go. Get your votes in for Severin. This is open to 5 p.m. tonight, so a lot of time left. All right, matchup number three, we have Jeff Jarrett's My World song. R-Truth, Get Crunk, Fatu, Make a Difference, and Everything, Clean It Up, that song. And the Body Donis theme song, which, of course, was Skippin' Sonny, and then eventually the Body Donis.
Skippin' Zip. What was the first one?
My World, Jeff Jarrett's TNA theme.
Oh, the... I love that song. I like Jarrett's TNA theme.
It's all over that four-disc DVD set, right?
That's right. Absolutely. Let's take a look. No.
All right, up next. Yeah, give me the listing of that. All right, here's the next one. We have Bobby Lashley's theme. We have Ashley Massaro, Light a Fire. Jeff Jarrett's initial WWF theme, his 1996, and The Beautiful People's TNA song. That's Velvet Sky and Angelina Love. Yeah, Beautiful People song, because you didn't know it.
Man, I was never crazy about that one. What was the other one again? The first one?
Bobby Lashley, Ashley Massaro, and Jeff Jarrett's original 94, 95, 96 theme.
I didn't mind Lashley's.
Well, only Lashley's. A few people agree with you, because he's dead last right now.
Oh, Lashley's definitely the one from like 2006, 2007?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that. I never had a problem with it. I like that theme.
Right now, it's pretty much Beautiful People and Jarrett in a battle, neck and neck.
All right, here we go. Here's an interesting one. We have a Dirty White Boy by the Dirty White Boys. That's a Chad Campbell selection. Men on a Mission's theme song, the original. Buff Bagwell's Buff Daddy is a late era WCW song. And then Mean Gene singing Tutti Frutti, which became his theme song.
Mean Gene.
Even over Buff?
Buff's was good. I'm starting to enjoy his now as I've been...
Buff
Daddy. Yeah, starting to kind of get into it. Starting to get into it as I've been watching the 98 WCW pay-per-views. He's starting to play that a lot. All right, I'll go with Buff.
You know, Buff. Well, him and Mean Gene are neck and neck as well.
So. Oh, there you go.
Okay. Quite a battle there. All right, we have Hardcore Holly's "How Do You Like Me Now."
Ugh.
AJ Lee's "Right Now," which is her original song before the "Light It Up." Kona Crush, the Happy Crush song. And our favorite song, Scott Criscolo, I love each and every one of you. Good old Sal Sincere.
Well, you know what I'm going to vote for.
All right! All right, Sally boy. Now, you want to go through the other ones?
Sure. Why not?
Some time here. All right, anything to avoid getting back to that show. all right, here's our seventh one. We have a Diesel. Well, surprised that he was in the playing round, but he's there. X Factor, of course, our favorite Uncle Cracker theme.
Yeah.
Chris Jericho's original WCW theme. I'll play that for you here in case you don't remember it. Little happy cruiserweight theme.
Yes.
And Nunzio's, basically his Beastie Boys ripoff with Dirty F, the No Stop Till Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Give me the beat, boy, and free my soul.
And I got X-Pac heat no one's ever heard of.
On a roll.
So.
Job away.
I don't know. What do you like?
I voted for X-Factor.
That's fine.
And they're in a tight battle here with Diesel's Diesel Blues.
All
right, another
tough... You didn't vote for Big Daddy Cools, huh?
No, I mean X-Factor. You know, that's going to be in there.
Yeah.
Another tight matchup here. In the next one, we have Enzo Amore's Soft as a Sin. Of course, what he uses right now in NXT. Chris Jericho's second WCW theme, which I like a lot. I was kind of surprised this was in the play. It's kind of his Nirvana ripoff theme here he had during his heel run when he was a conspiracy theorist.
Which, by the way,
yes,
wiped out of off the network.
As I've been watching. Oh yeah, they put in the walls, right?
They put in his current theme. Yeah.
Oh, how stupid! This is such an awesome song.
Yep. They put in the break the walls down, which really felt weird.
Winter's Hands of the Wicked from TNA and Three Count singing their titular theme, Three Count.
I think I like Jericho.
Me too. That's one of my favorites. But him and Enzo are in a battle. Actually, Three Count's in there too. So a three-way fight here going on. And of course, all the songs and little videos are on the site when you go to vote. So in case you forget what some of them are. Jeff Jarrett pops up for the 15th time here in the play-in round. His 1998 song, which was the one that him and Deborah...
sorry. I got to turn the DVDs on.
Do you remember that friggin'... was it a Pandora? No. What was that internet radio station that had the... wrestling themes we used to listen to?
Yeah.
And they always played. Remember that one always came on?
Like every fourth song?
Yeah.
What was that?
It wasn't Pandora. It was some random.
No, it was absolutely not Pandora.
It was some random station that has played wrestling themes that we used to listen to. And like that would always come on.
It's like every fifth song.
So this is the one that's in this bracket here. You know, the one him and Deborah had in 98.
Yeah. 98. Yeah.
I like that one, too. I was a little surprised that didn't make it further. So we got that one. We got Crime Time. We got Mike Tyson's WWF theme, Fist. One he used at WrestleMania 14.
That eventually became Xbox. Yeah.
And then Owen Hart's Enough is Enough. So the one after he started using it right after he broke Austin's neck, and then he used it after he turned and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that Owen Hart theme. Who do you like here?
I don't know. Owen and Tyson are both very good.
This is the toughest bracket to me. I voted Jarrett because I always like that theme with him and Deborah. Owen is well ahead, though, right now.
That was a good theme. I like Jarrett's theme.
All right. Greg Valentine's face theme that he used in 91.
Oh, that's terrible.
Rikishi's.
You know the one. Do you know what the words are to this? I never knew them.
I don't know.
You look fly today is what they're saying. I never knew that.
I just thought they were going, bah, 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 bah. That's really all I thought it was.
You look fly today. It's like Mark Morrison, Return of the Mac. Jeff Jarrett's here again with his WCW theme.
Poor Jarrett. Like, every theme he's in the play in.
I like how every late era WCW theme just rips off. This is Cowboy, of course, by Kid Rock.
Yes. Slap nuts.
Does this not sum up Jarrett's career, though? Like, just never could make it that next level. Like, always the best of the worst, right, is Jeff Jarrett. And I love Jeff. I mean, he came out with us and everything. Great guy, but...
Yeah. No, we do like Jeff.
Always just, not quite there. And then Adam Rose's current theme,
don't like that. I'll take Jarrett's cheesy chosen one.
Well, you should actually go in there and cast. I can't vote. I haven't voted on all these. You should go in and cast your vote because I've already voted. But him and Adam Rose are in a battle. Actually, this is all pretty close. Only 7 votes separate all 4. You don't like the Hammer theme?
I was never a fan of that theme. It seemed very...
Get the hammer banging and everything.
Such a 90s, like 80s, early 80s.
It's kind of cool that they actually gave him something themed to him, though, right? You would think Valentine wouldn't earn like his own theme. Like, it's kind of cool they actually put the hammer noise in for him. All right, we got Sugar Shane Helms' Vertebraker, which is a ripoff of, if you listen to it, of Shimmy Shimmy Ya, of course. His no WCW theme cannot be a ripoff of something else. And then to keep it up, we have Elix Skipper's WCW theme, which was DMX ripoff. Up in here.
You're going to make me lose my mind. I'll take Elix Skipper.
Well, hang on. We didn't
give you we're not done yet?
We got Bo Dallas's Shoot for the Stars.
Oh, God.
And then the my favorite, the Dungeon of Doom theme.
Oh, are you serious? Yep. Oh, it's dreadful.
What? That was a good one with the laughing in the background. And
yes, that was all of us laughing at them because they were terrible.
It's a good song. It's a good song for Shit Stable.
Yeah, that's true, too.
You want Prime Time?
Yeah, I did like Crime Times.
No, Prime Time.
Oh, Prime Skipper. Time. I thought you said Crime Time. I don't know. I kind of still like Elix Skippers.
Let me tell you who built this house, Prime Time. Vertebraker is winning that one.
Okay.
All right, last one of this play-in round. We have Ernest Miller's WCW theme, I'm the Greatest. We have a 3-Minute Warning, which is seems like another song that probably could have been in. Nasty Boys' WCW theme. And Alicia Fox and Maria Kanellis shared the party, which I don't think you're going to vote for. I'm not going to play it. But the Nasty Boys theme, I love it. Pity City.
Yep. Nasty Boys. We're the boys.
So who do you like?
We're the
one?
Boys. Yeah, I like that one a lot.
All right. Well, they are Ernest Miller's and a little bit of a comfortable lead, but it's
there was a there was definitely a renaissance of WCW themes between like 93 mm-hmm. and like 96.
Yeah.
There were some really good themes.
And there'll be a lot in the tournament. So yeah. 298 total. You heard a handful of them there. A lot of 292 rather total. You heard a handful of them there. A lot more to come. So each and every week and day, and make sure you continue to check out PlayStation.com. Participate in that tournament. Let's get the votes rolling in. Let's make it even more successful than the 90s was. Speaking of music, you can check out Jason Greenhouse's weekend playlist. Mark Clare finally resurfaced to finish his breaking down the top matches of 2014. Gave his top 5. So be sure to check that out. Greg Phillips and Nick Duke were back. Hard traveling fanboys going off the page. Looking at Hulk and the Agents of Smash. Glenn mm-hmm. Butler continued his Deep Space Nine Star Trek trek through time. He's on episode 9 of season 1. Of course, Glenn does a great job with those very popular pieces here at the site. Joel Barnhart's in the middle of his MLB preview series. Of course, that goes hand in hand with your extra point. And Sports Lounge did one as well. That should be coming out in a couple days here. Yep. Joel's doing division by division. So the full American League is up right now. So check mm-hmm. that out. Yep. Our buddy Dave Musgrave is in the house looking at a WrestleMania weekend recap. Chucked out WWN Live, Mercury Rising. Gives his full review there. Richard and the Mailman were back looking at the newest episode of Better Call Saul. A great new podcast here on the site, Exile on Bad Street, with our buddy Chris Zellner. You hear him usually on the post-game shows on the pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. He had David Bixenspan. Good old Bix was with him, as long as with our buddy Dylan Hales. And looking at the, and this is a very, very well-regarded episode because they're kind of looking at the Freebirds' evolution in wrestling. This focuses on the demise of the UWF and how they build up to the buyout and all that. So, you know, three very knowledgeable guys on the topic, great historians, and very. It's a long, very in-depth podcast. So if you're into that era and into that kind of stuff, check that out. It's a must-listen. Also must-listen, the History of Wrestling podcast with Brad Stutz, Graham Cawthon, and Dan McGinn. Looking at how Dirty won over the mainstream media, talking about, of course, Rock and Ronda Rousey, and then all the other celebrities kind of built into the concept and legacy of WrestleMania and beyond. Scott, our Vintage Vault Refresh series continued, SummerSlam 1992, continued to rip through those. More Dave Musgrave, looking at other shows around WrestleMania weekend, is up there. He's, I think he's got four or five up there. Stephen Graham was back with the new Pro Wrestling Super Show, looking at my boy Mr. Fuji as a wrestler. New episode of Brain Buster, Scott, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show, episode 3. Can Kelly defend his title? He's up against Dylan and Chris Zellner, from we just heard about on the other show. But can they take down the Beast Kelly, who's looks to be quite the force on this show?
Yes. Yep, definitely.
So all that and much, much more. Be sure to check out PlaceMination.com. New episode of Kevin Kelly in the main event coming next week as well. As we continue to move on past WrestleMania, we had a lot of tons of great WrestleMania content. Check that out. If you're into lists and rankings, we have that all you could ever want there.
Plenty of shows. And
So go back and check that out. I mean, Goodwill Wrestling, Will had, I think, six WrestleMania shows, including, and that was not including the WrestleMania recap, the live reaction. So check that. He had a lot of good WrestleMania-based podcast material. So lots going on, PlaceMination.com. As always, hit us up on Facebook.com/PlaceMination at Twitter as well. So, Oof, I need a breather.
All right, well, take a breather. Don't take a breather with RVD. I won't hear from you again.
No, right. Or Bob Marley.
Or Bob Marley, yeah. All right. Next up, our next title match, JR, the United States Championship is on the line in our next match as we head back to Los Angeles. Your champion, of course, John Cena. Cena won it at WrestleMania from the Big Show. Taking on a guy who was part of the draft and is now on his own. Who is that, JR?
Fresh Chicklet Cole. What are you hugging about? That's a great song. Yes. On 325, John Cena made his way out. Welcome Rene Dupree and his dog Fifi to SmackDown. On 415, Dupree announced that his new talk segment, Café du Rene, would debut the next week. His first guest would be Tori Wilson. Rene harassed her about her role in the Angle Show confrontation. Rene splashed wine in her face. It was about to slam her down before Cena came out to make the save. The next week, Angle put Dupree and Wilson into a match. A few minutes in, Cena made the save. And Angle granted Dupree a title match here. So Dupree split off from La Rez. He's on his own. A young guy, but they see some potential. Good size, good look. They gave him a large poodle named Fifi.
Yeah, the poodle was like a fucking horse.
Yeah, that was, it was on as much steroids as he was, apparently. all juiced up. He rides it down to the ring. And drinking wine, eating baguettes, and ready to face John Cena. What did you think of giving Dupree a whirl as a singles guy?
He was the most misshapen looking. It was so weird. Here, take some of these, Fifi. It's like he was like almost like a cartoon character. Well, I mean, fresh draft pick, and I mean, obviously with Heyman kind of trying to reestablish himself backstage, this SmackDown roster was kind of in a state of flux, and you might as well give the fresh guy the title shot and kind of freshen up the show. I don't think it was bad for Cena either, but no, I was fine with it. I mean, he was entertaining. He was a good heel, and he was getting a lot of time on the show. I did like the little segment where he threw wine in Tori's face, and I had no problem with him being elevated. Not a problem with him elevated. Did he have that theme?
Yeah, they both
he
kept
did bring it.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, Raz kept it too.
Yeah, so
they
kind
of keep
probably the only theme used on both shows. Yeah.
Well, him doing the French Tickler Wetzel's Pretzels dance with the music is still the best.
Yeah.
Do you think Cena felt above this? Like, does it feel like he came down more than Dupree's coming up?
Nah, I didn't think so.
No?
No, I thought he was fine. I mean, under the circumstances, there's only one other guy you could have put him with, and he's on in our next match. And he ends up working with him later on in the year anyway. So no, I didn't have a problem with this.
I mean, this is another spot a heel RVD could have worked.
Yes, very much so. But
I really think they missed a boat. The more I talk about it, I think they missed a boat not turning RVD heel. I think there was a void that could have really been filled with him.
Yes, that is true. Having said that, I do have no problem with Rene Dupree here. But yeah, if you turn RVD heel, to getting back to what you were saying earlier, you could stick him in a myriad of slots on this pay-per-view. But I had no problem with Rene Dupree here. Not at all.
Stick him in a lot of slots.
In the box.
Crowd's hot for Cena. Very hot. Yep. Dupree just has absurd, the highlighted spiked hair. This is pretty much 2004 in a nutshell. That look.
What do you think of the crowd so far?
Yeah, I thought they were fine. I didn't mind.
Really?
I mean,
I thought they were a little flat.
Well, look what they've been given. I mean, we've been flat. It's like, what do you want? You know?
Yeah.
How excited are you going to get for Mordecai and Scotty? I thought they're pretty well for the last few matches.
That is.
Yeah, so Dupree's absurd look. Cena gets an aggressive star, hits a very stiff clothesline to knock Dupree to the floor. Dupree runs Cena to the post and takes control. Dupree works the back, uses a bear hug. Cena makes a comeback, but he's cut off by a nice Dupree spine buster. And that leads into the French tickler. Cena comes back again, hits an FU for the flash win. I thought it was a fine match. It was very by the book. I thought RVD. Rene Dupree looks pretty good in his basic offense, and Cena's reign continues. I thought they made Dupree look strong, because I feel like they kind of made like Cena, I don't want to say desperation win, but he just kind of popped up, hit the FU, and got the win. And Dupree took most of the match.
Yeah. Cole and Taz made a point a few times to say, you know, that Dupree made one mistake, just one mistake, cost him the U.S. title. I thought Cena was fine here. I thought both guys were fine. At first, I was trying to, and Cole does make a point about what's on the back of his tights. I thought it said French Tickler. It actually said French Phenom. That would have been, you know, but it had I think it was in the Wetzel's Pretzels font. So
yes,
it fits right in. Cup of cheese.
That's all I eat.
That's all I eat. Match is just under 10 minutes, 9:56. I liked it. I liked it a lot, actually. I thought it was a fine match. I had no problem with it.
No, it wasn't bad. I like the point you brought up, that they really hammered home that Dupree made just that one, you know, one rookie young man mistake, and it gave Cena the opening to hit the FU and get the win.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it was good for both guys. I think Cena worked hard to retain here, and I think Dupree shined to the point where you can use him maybe at another pay-per-view, and we'll talk about that. On our next blue show, you could keep this feud going. I know she's Dupree, but your subliminal slips of RVD makes us realize, they did have some untapped potential here if they had turned him heel. But
instead, it's just
Yumi and Dupree. There you go. So John Cena retains his United States Championship. Didn't switch to the spinner yet. I guess he doesn't do that for a few more months. Okay. Next up. I guess you could say they were trying to make this like a co-main event almost.
Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga.
Yes. Talk about him, JR. We mentioned him at Backlash.
Yeah, he was traded. And as soon as the ink dried on those papers, Booker expressed his displeasure with being traded to SmackDown. He said it was the inferior show, it was below him. He made his beliefs loud and clear to anyone that would listen. On 4-8, Booker completed a heel turn by turning on his tag partner, RVD. On 4-22... Booker went on another anti-SmackDown rant when the Undertaker's music started up. A frightened Booker quickly took off, and the segment ended. 2 weeks later, Booker visited a fortune teller to ask for ways to beat Taker. She sent him on a mission to find various objects, including dirt from a grave with no name. Later in the show, Booker obtained the dirt and fled the scene just before a hand shot up from the grave. There's a lot of build and anticipation for this match, because Undertaker had been used very sparingly since his return to Mania. And it was made clear that during this match, it was a rare appearance for the dead man. So they're really trying to make him like a special attraction at this point. And Cole really hammers that home. A rare appearance by the legendary Undertaker. So really trying to make him like a big deal when you get to see him live.
Yes. Yep. Particularly on a secondary show.
That would end quickly, but here.
Sadly.
What did you think of the whole... Well, A, what did you think of Booker's heel turn, the way they went about it? I liked it a lot. I liked the whole... Because that was always the rumor that SmackDown was the second show. So it was kind of cool to see him basically kind of acknowledge it and come out there and just crap on having to be stuck on SmackDown.
Oh, that was fantastic. Now, there's a guy where, why couldn't they have done this with RVD? I know we keep hammering this point home, but it worked wonders for Booker. He was, you know, flat.
Do you think Booker's heel turn negated RVD's potential? Like, they didn't want to turn both of them and the Dudleys? Like, you could turn all the Raw guys?
Yeah, that's entirely possible.
But you could have put Heyman with all of them. You could have said Heyman was mad. He's like a drafted to Raw. And
so he quit.
Well, and he finds his way back to SmackDown and gets all the guys that were on Raw to turn and, you know, be pissed off about going to Raw. So you could have had all of them be a stable, the Dudleys, RVD, and Booker.
Would have been fun. That's fun little fun little heel faction. Probably what the show needed. Maybe a little heel faction wouldn't have hurt, kind of give it some stability. With Kurt maybe helping pull the strings. And Luther Reigns. Could have had him in there too. Yeah, he could have had like this little cachet of heels to kind of stabilize the roster after the draft happened. Yeah, I agree with that. But here takes on another guy who
Did you think of the graveyard stuff with the bag and all that though? Was that a little bit hokey?
I think
he was trying to kill kill Weeks because Taker wasn't really on TV.
Yeah, definitely. I thought it was a little over the top on that one.
So Taker pushes a special attraction. That was a unique, fresh matchup based on Booker shit-talking about being the biggest star. Booker's got the weird bag. Paul Bearer still with Undertaker, which was kind of cool, too. Booker feels out early, goes right at Taker. Taker gets some offense. Booker comes back strong, including a nice missile dropkick. Slips out of the last ride. We get a ref bump. Booker tosses the bag contents into Taker's eyes. Taker comes back hot, but Booker goes to the leg and busts Taker back down. Taker comes back again, hits a tombstone, grabs the win. Again, I thought this was very similar to the match before it, where Booker pretty much dominated, got a lot of offense in. I thought it looked believable that he may steal the win, and then Taker got it, which is fine. I don't think you're ready to start jobbing Taker out right away. Booker, I mean, he can take the loss and still be the delusional heel. I like this. I thought it was a pretty good veteran match, and the crowd was into it. I thought Taker worked hard, and I liked the storyline of Booker being, you know, pissed off and hating life on SmackDown, and Taker, the ultimate SmackDown guy, comes out to defend his brand.
Yeah, I thought it was very well done. I thought the match was good. It's kind of a fresh combination. The two had never been in the ring before. And I think seeing Taker back in the dead man persona has kind of helped refresh some things. And, we didn't see Booker and Taker really together much at all, even since the invasion. So I thought this was a good combination, working together. The match isn't awe-inspiring, but I thought it was very unique. And I thought Booker, I still think Booker looks okay even losing. I don't know what your thoughts on that. Losing didn't bug me.
No, not at all. No, I thought he gave him a lot. Yeah, these guys fought before, right? Was it 0-1? Like No Mercy 01 or something? And I remember liking the match then, too. I thought they had pretty good chemistry.
Was it No Mercy 01?
I thought so. It was...
Yeah, because I guess he was still a heel. It wasn't Survivor Series. It might have been No Mercy 01, yeah. Yeah, after Unforgiven. Yeah. I think it was a fresh look. And I do love the way Booker went about it, saying that, you know, I'm... Because the best way to be a heel is to say that I'm, that everything's trash. So it fit perfectly for the persona and kind of validated the fact that he needed to leave Raw, because him being a heel on Raw would have gotten buried, obviously, by all the other heels on the show. So
yeah, all the other heels. Yes. All right, let's get to our main event here.
All right, so
all those other heels are gonna bury him.
All those other heels, three quarters of the Raw roster. So. All right. Our main event, the WWE Championship is on the line. Your champion is still Latino Heat, Eddie Guerrero, who of course won it back at No Way Out, successfully defended it at WrestleMania, taking on, unbelievably, a brand new, well, sort of, guy to SmackDown. Not really new, but kind of. Tell us, JR.
On 3/18, the APA, stale APA, crossed paths with GM Paul Heyman, and angry Heyman told them that if they lost their match with Scotty and Rikishi, they'd be fired. The APA lost, made their way back to Heyman's office. Heyman clarified himself and told Farouk that he was fired because he saw promise of Bradshaw due to his financial wizardry. If you remember, Bradshaw was always on Fox News doing stock stuff. He wrote a book, well-known for his investment prowess. Farouk started to leave, but stopped when Bradshaw didn't leave with him. Bradshaw told him he was staying and not quitting on Farouk's behalf. Farouk gave him a disappointed look and left the office. The angle was rooted in truth, as Ron Simmons was actually fired the day that show was taped. The next week, Bradshaw debuted his new financial wizard gimmick and let everyone know that he would now be known as John Bradshaw Layfield. So a lot to unpack here before we move to the angle. So Simmons being fired and going along with the angle, I thought was kind of cool. I thought it was well overdue. I thought they've always obviously seen potential in JBL. And actually, we talked about this when we had Kevin on with the WrestleMania 13 rewind we did. Talked about how they always saw something in Bradshaw, a guy that they always, you know, thought always gave something to. And he, even then, he gets kind of the push with the Blackjacks. They're kind of spotlighted. So it seemed like they always were trying to find a fit for him. And I don't know if they just got comfortable with the APA stuff and never went further with it. You know, they tried to split him off in 02, and then he got hurt. But I thought it was a good decision, and I thought it was a great decision to make him as different from the APA as they possibly could. And it was a good time for this angle to work. Like, I don't know, and we had this discussion in our chat, I don't know if this angle or this character would have worked as well before this point. I think it was the perfect timing because, you know, he's doing the rich man, Republican, all-American, you know, I'm rich, you're not, I don't give a fuck, kind of, you know, kind of a hybrid, more political Ted DiBiase kind of thing. And I feel like, you know, the closer we were to 9/11, something like this wasn't going to get a ton of heel heat or get over. We're into 04, everyone's kind of done with Bush, and the election's coming up, and now here comes this, you know, asshole, rich oil tycoon kind of guy. I thought it was just good timing. Like, oh, like I thought it fit well with all the people that would be annoyed with what was going on in politics, could be annoyed with JBL. Like, it made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and the fact that Eddie was, you know, that your champion was a Latino, considering, you know, the underlying immigration thing always is talked about. But, yeah, I mean, it was time for them to break up. I feel bad that Farouk, you know, Ron Simmons got fired. You know,
I mean,
obviously.
He was cooked. He was just done.
Yeah, I mean, there was really nothing for him they could do, even if they kept him for some, you know, way, shape, or form. But, yeah, I think it was. I was ready for it. The question still remains: the briskness with which the character was elevated. I think that's the. And we'll talk about that here, and obviously document that throughout the rest of 2004. Was this a guy who maybe could have started a little lower, and you put someone else in this spot that we're about to talk about? Well, we've talked about the character. Before we get into elevating and stuff, why don't we get into the feud and get into the match.
On 4-1, it was announced a handful of competitors would compete to determine the next challenger, as well as earning Kurt Angle's Great American Award. Angle was about to announce JBL as the final nominee for the award, but Eddie Guerrero came down, stole JBL's cowboy hat, and had fans throw food and drinks at it. At the end of the 4-8 SmackDown, Angle was about to announce John Cena as the award winner, when he was interrupted by JBL. JBL rolled footage of himself at the U.S.-Mexico border, preventing illegal immigrants from entering the country. This act of bravery swayed the vote, and JBL was named the award winner. When Angle went to unveil the trophy, it was revealed the trophy had been replaced with a picture of Eddie. Eddie then appeared with the real trophy and smashed it to pieces. The next week, Eddie was discussing JBL's award victory and was interrupted by a propaganda video smearing his title reign. Angle announced JBL would receive a title match at the pay-per-view, and JBL was too exhausted from campaigning to compete that night. On 4/22, JBL faced and defeated El Gran Luchador.
Hang on one sec.
Okay, sorry. The supposed Mexican heavyweight champion. On 5/6, Michael Cole informed us that Eddie's mother had suffered a heart attack at a recent house show. She was celebrating an Eddie win with him and Eddie's wife and daughters to celebrate Mother's Day. JBL attacked her son and then put his hand on her, causing her to collapse. Later in the show, JBL explained his actions and continued to rail on the Hispanic people, which had become the crux of the feud. JBL rolled into the show after defeating Rey Mysterio on 5/13. And of course, part of that whole thing was just his unbelievable, if she dies, she dies stuff, racist,
yes,
promo stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, JBL is going all out, right? Racist.
Yeah.
Hating Mexicans. Yeah, I mean, the border thing was absurd, right? Running around in the dark with a flashlight.
I thought it was awesome. It was hilarious, but yeah.
Just pedal to the metal with this character. Aggressive heel turn. A great character. But do you feel the push hurt him that it happened so fast that all of a sudden he's in the world title feud?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I would have put Booker T here.
Would you have JBL maybe win the U.S. title? But you don't want to kill Cena, so it's kind of a tough thing. Would you just have him work his way up just a little bit more? Like, when would you have pulled the trigger on JBL getting in the title picture?
October.
Okay. Because there's another factor in place. Ben Morse mentioned this, that your champion is starting to feel the pressure. And sooner than later, they had to get the belt off him.
So what pressure he was feeling, though?
Well, you know, being the lead guy in the brand, if numbers, attendance sags, you start to feel a little bit.
Yeah.
Just the guy always had, you know, not a complex, but a little self-conscious. Would JBL have been ready by our next show in July if he didn't have this match here, if they built him at least from March to July? Would you have felt a little bit better?
Perhaps. Actually, late June.
Right.
Late June. Or was it two in July?
No, you're right. I think it was June.
Yeah.
No, is that our next one? Oh, no, because that's right. Raw's got, okay. Yeah, no, it was late June.
I think there's two in June.
Yeah, you're right. It was the end of June.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe. You might have been able to get away with it by the end of June. Yeah, because it's June 27th. And I think our next show, Bad Blood, is the 13th. I think by then you might have got away with it. Otherwise, I would have waited till maybe even through the summer. I think you would have really – I think the guy – that you really should have pushed as a good established heel would have been Booker. I would have put Booker in this spot.
Can you think of a more immediate hard character turn leading a guy to main events than this?
Yeah. I mean, career tag team guy.
I mean, is there anyone that's been like this that you can think of? Just immediate, complete 180 character change, and then all of a sudden he's a main eventer?
Sean in 92?
Was he really a main eventer? I mean, he wasn't.
Well, I mean, he main evented the one pay-per-view.
Yeah, but he had been heel for a year. I mean,
yeah, that's
this
true.
Would be like if he main evented 92 Rumble. You know what I mean?
Oh, right. Andre. Turn heel in January.
He's already a main eventer, though.
Oh, you mean going from, like, babyface mid-card to, like, main event heel?
Yeah, or whatever, vice versa. Heel, mid-card, main event, babyface. I mean, Diesel? Probably the closest.
What about Sting? I mean, Starrcade 87, he's in a forgotten... I mean, he doesn't turn, but he debuts, you know, through the UWF merger at Star... And in Starrcade 87, isn't he like in a throwaway match or something? And then, what, 3 months later, he's... in a 45-minute world title match with the greatest guy in the world.
That's just a push, though. I mean, it's not really.
That's the closest thing I could think of. I really can't think of anything this drastic.
I think Diesel is the closest to me. Heel, I mean, upper mid-card heel, and then all of a sudden he's a face world champion. So anyway, Eddie's been a fun champ. I thought all along that this is a tailor-made feud with these guys. JBL's been just legit, just dickhead heel heat all over him. Perfect feud of these characters. JBL is ice cold about Eddie's mom's heart attack. Cuts a really racist promo before the show, just diving in. Eddie's gets a fast start, really aggressive, looking for revenge, which I loved. He doesn't fuck around, you know, headlocks and all the shit. He goes right to JBL, just wrecks him on the floor, uses the post and the table. I thought JBL's chicken heel routine was already refined perfectly. Just great character work, begging off and trying to run. He didn't take much time to get that down. Eddie's just locked in here. JBL's able to get control on the floor, and he grinds Eddie with a side headlock to slow him down, and the crowd is just red hot for Eddie here. Hits a desperation dive to the floor. JBL catches him, hits a nasty fallaway slam on the mats on the floor. Eddie gets a good selling during his comeback. JBL blocks a third amigo of the three with a stiff knee, and then it just smashes Eddie across the face with a sickening, gross chair shot. Eddie hits a disgusting blade job, just gushing blood pouring all over him. Gory, one of the goriest blade jobs you'll ever see. JBL, this dick heel, smiling, and he's showing off Eddie's bloody face and like laughing, and he's holding his head up. It's a very stiff clothesline from hell, which rattles Eddie. The ref is just down, this absurd ref bump where Hebner's down for like 15 minutes. JBL crushes Eddie with a powerbomb, gets a great near fall, tons of blood just everywhere, just absurd amount of blood. Yeah. Eddie hulks up, the crowd is rallying him, blood just
gushing. And to me, this was Eddie's defining moment as he's rallying up, hulking up and blood everywhere. And it really felt like this is your next like top guy for a while when you watch that. Eddie misses a frog splash, comes back with a low blow. He hits JBL with a title and gets DQ'd. Eddie hammers on JBL after the match, smacks him with the belt, and JBL starts bleeding. Eddie just hits him with stiff chair shot receipts, really, really nasty chair shots back, and hits a frog splash to stand tall to end the show. Blood's just dripping everywhere. I thought it was a crazy, crazy match. I thought it was a show-making match. I thought it was a great brawl. It was a really good match overall. It was a brutal war. I was absolutely okay with the DQ here. It did not bother me at all to keep the feud going. I thought it made perfect sense with the way the feud had been built that Eddie would snap and go crazy and finally just hit him with the belt and get DQ'd. I thought it made perfect sense across the board. I thought everyone got their money worth with that match. Mm-hmm. It felt like a big time fight with a good time with a big time post match as well. And I thought they did a good job despite the hasty build. I thought JBL felt legit here watching this back. Now I know at the time it didn't, so I'm really curious to watch JBL's evolution here in 04, because at the time, like, no one could believe it that this was fucking Bradshaw, and everyone, a lot of people hated on it just because of who it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like watching back, like, the match felt like a big deal. Like, it felt big time to me. So I don't know if it's just, if it's going to feel differently because we know how good he gets and what he is. But I don't think it felt out of place at all watching it here.
I definitely think that the character really showed itself in this match. Obviously, you know, JBL has not been used to wrestling singles matches, so he obviously needed to kind of adapt. Eddie's hot, and, you know, his character is fantastic. But this match, and they get a lot of time. I mean, they get over 23 minutes. So they get a lot of time to really tell a great story, and I thought they told a fantastic story. And I think JBL's just good at what he does. Was he still struggling to get the character over and for the fans to buy it? A little, yeah. But Eddie definitely deserves a hell of a lot of credit for really helping put him over as a heel, just as much as a JBL in the tail end of this match with, you know, brain matter flying all over the place, putting Eddie over as this, you know, determined guy who's not going to let what happened to his mom or what happened and what kind of person JBL's character is stop him from continuing to be the face of SmackDown. A scientific note here, JR. The supratrochlear artery, that is the artery that starts behind your eyes and goes up to your forehead and into your, you know, the front part of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably the artery that that Eddie probably cut that led to just poor. I mean, it is literally, it's like Vince at Vengeance 03.
I was worse than that.
I mean, in that
we've had
sense.
Some gory ones lately, like the one was it with Taker at the Hell in a Cell. Like, that was a gory one.
Yep.
But
what's another one? Shawn at Bad Blood 97.
Right. Like, we've had some bad ones, but this is just, I mean, just gobs of blood. Just, I mean, every, like, to the point where
stopping.
You kind of wonder if they should have stopped the match and tried to help him because you might die of blood loss. But
yeah.
He ends up, I'm pretty sure he went to shock after, and then he couldn't even perform for 2 weeks at full strength as he tried to basically rebuild his blood supply because he lost so much of it here.
Yeah.
Do you agree with me that it was kind of his defining moment when he was hulking up and the blood pouring everywhere? And
yeah.
And the crowd's going nuts. And
He's doing it. He's doing the, you know, the Latino heat shimmy. And yeah, no, it was the one thing I think you'll remember. I think there's two things three things, in my opinion. Three things you'll remember from this title reign. The frog splash that he beats Brock with.
Mm-hmm.
The pulling off of his boot and the subsequent small package where he hooks the ropes with his feet at WrestleMania to your boy, and then this just showed that this guy would, as much as he had a lot of stuff going on in his head about whether he can carry this brand with this title, he went out there and just gave everything while everything was falling out of him. He did just as much for JBL as JBL did for him, and this visual of JBL just hitting him and hitting him and just shit, just pour blood flying all over the place. I mean, the canvas was literally disgusting.
And the chair shots were insane too.
Yeah, definitely. But him just still having enough wherewithal. He was probably getting lightheaded. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And he's, you know, doing his little shimmy, and the place is going fucking crazy. And it was really good. I was watching it again today, and it's probably the first time I've watched this match in a while. I think it's on one of Eddie's DVDs, I think. I don't think I still am shocked at how much I really enjoyed this match.
It was awesome.
Package.
It was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it really was.
It's kind of forgotten classic in a way, because it's such a just a weird show. But yeah. it was a really good match even before the end. The chair shots are disgusting. JBL's character work is great. The crowd is super into it. It has a great feud behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect dichotomy character. It's just a really good match. If you haven't watched it before or haven't seen it in a while, I highly recommend it. I really liked it. I'm looking forward to the rematch. I'm glad they kept the feud going. And I definitely thought JBL felt like he belonged, which I liked.
Did you feel at any point before the end that you thought this might be a one-shot thing, or no?
Yeah, before the end, I definitely did. When Eddie, like I said, was doing the shimmy and the blood's got, I thought maybe, okay, here we go. He finishes him off, and now we move on to the next challenge. So I was definitely surprised that JBL survived for another show. I was not expecting in any way Eddie's title reign to be in jeopardy this soon.
Okay. I didn't either. Until the match ended and JBL won by DQ, and I thought, well, then there's definitely a rematch coming. So there you go. JBL wins the match by disqualification. Eddie hits him with a chair, but Eddie does retain his WWE Championship in an unbelievable match. Again, 23 minutes, 15 seconds. It's really good and highly recommend it. I don't recommend much else on this show. Maybe, again, the last three matches pretty much do it, but this match is just really good, and JBL deserves a lot of credit for keeping his character strong, even if anybody thought he didn't deserve it. The only other guy I could see that I would have given this title shot to was Booker. Otherwise, I was fine with JBL. And it's not a hindsight thing. I really did at the time think, this is, yes, did I think he should have gotten a title shot this quick? No.
I mean, a lot of people just couldn't get over that it was Bradshaw. Like, is Bradshaw still doing this? This is Bradshaw. Like, I remember that as being a rallying cry on the internet for a long time in 2004. Yeah. Like, this is fucking Bradshaw doing all this. Like, they couldn't get past that point, despite how hard he was working and how good he was in the role. They couldn't get past the fact that it was just Bradshaw doing this. So
now, would he hit a bump in the road in the middle of the year? Yeah, he would. Because a feud would come up that would just not. But that's really not his fault. I think that's a lot of it's just, chemistry, but we'll get to that. I almost feel like maybe by January, I think people finally started to, kind of embrace him as, wow, maybe this does work, But right now, I think people, I agree with you, JR. I think it's very simple for people to just say, but dude, it's Bradshaw.
Right. Did this match shave the show for you?
I really liked Cena Dupree more than I probably should. I liked Taker Booker, but it still would have been a forgotten show if this match was just average.
Right. Taker Booker and Cena Dupree are just fine. I mean, they stand out, I think, because of what was before it was so shaky.
But if this match was just if this match was like a then this show would be easily forgotten. But they came out and they got the job done. And I don't think anybody expected it. Eddie's Eddie. You always know he's going to come out and give you everything he possibly has. But
right, you just didn't know what to expect from Bradshaw.
No, not in a singles match of this magnitude. And he surprised pleasantly. And it continues. So, again, JBL wins the match by DQ. Eddie retains the WWE Championship. We are far from done with these two. So, all right. There you go. Final thoughts. Again, a show split in half. Beginning of the show was crap, and the last three matches really do it.
Yeah, I think that's what SmackDown's going to be in 04. I think it's very, very, very top-heavy. A very thin undercard, and they're going to throw a lot of stuff at the wall. Yep. I think when SmackDown is part of the multi-brand shows, the big shows, I think we'll be okay because you'll send their top whatever six guys or so.
Yeah, three matches.
But when they have to fill out their whole own show, they're going to have some rough spots.
You can see some struggles.
Jackie and Chavo. But no, it was fine. It was a fun watch. It was a quick watch. It was kind of a nice break after, you know, WrestleMania 20 being 17 hours, then coming down to
yes. Know, yes.
Where this was like 2 hours and 20 minutes or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah, 2:30 something.
It was a nice break, so that was good too. And Cole and Taz are fine. I like listening to them. So
yeah, Cole did a couple of his old. He kind of pulled his bag of goofy tricks out, and maybe, you know, used the wrong word here and there, but he definitely put everything over. He was really good at that. And Taz is Taz, you know. Let the reins. He didn't say Rocket Buster.
Rocket Buster.
But no, they were fine. They were absolutely fine. So yeah, I would you know, obviously it's on the network. I wouldn't recommend the whole match, the whole show.
Yeah, that match is worth watching.
Yeah, I would watch the last three matches. So. Particularly, I'm curious to see some people's opinions of Cena Dupree. Hmm. Because you're probably like, oh, God. But again, this is one of those things where just don't listen to other people and don't just assume based on reputation or what you think you remember. Watch the match. It's better than you think.
Yeah.
I'm already Dupree here. So there you go. Judgment Day 2004 in the books.
All right. He can move in with Matt Dillon anytime he wants. So let's wrap up. All right, we'll be back Monday with the Kevin Kelly Show. We have a guest tentatively scheduled. I will not reveal it because I'm not 100% sure. So stay tuned to Twitter this weekend. We'll announce it there. I'm hoping to be back to the full Kevin. The last two have been the kind of shortened shows with everything going on in my world, as Jeff Jarrett would say. So I've had to make some changes there. But we hope to be back with the full show. Do you know your main events lineup yet? You want to reveal
main
that?
Main event will be Thursday this coming week, simply because I wanted this guy back. And
Ryback?
It'll be myself, Mr. Morse, and two guests. Ben will have a guest, which he'll save to introduce that night. Right. And back, get the cowboy ready with his autograph pen, the Godfather. Back this week. Nate Milton will be back on the main event this week.
See if we get some more fireworks going.
That's right. Yeah. Oh my God. Just letting that. That was a great show. It really was.
Every time Ben brings a guest to main event, an internet smart gets his wings.
The PW. No, never mind. Some website gets their wings. No. Yeah. So that'll be this. Different schedule this week. Not Wednesday, but Thursday. We'll be recording, and I'll put it up that night. So. Okay. So main event this week will be on Thursday. We have myself.
Extra point this week. What's going on there?
Our next extra point will be because it's Easter Sunday. So next Sunday night will be our next extra point. TJ McAloon hopefully will join the doctor and I. We'll preview the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think my brother wants to kind of bash about, you know, get on his Ranger high horse. But yeah, next few extra points will be very good. If you haven't listened to our MLB preview, Joel was awesome as always. You can kind of counter it with his written previews on PlaceBeNation.com. We'll have our man Grant Hughes back soon, as we, of course, the NBA playoffs, JR, coming around the corner as well. So,
cool. Very good. All right.
There you go.
And then we'll be back 2 weeks from tonight with Bad Blood 2004.
Ugh. Yep.
2 weeks to get through that.
Ready.
It's going to take us 2 weeks to get through that.
47 match. Juicy yeah. minutes right
oh,
there.
God, it's going to take us 2 weeks just to get through that. Yes. Start drinking again. All right. So why don't we go to wrap up? Scott, I'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Kevin Kelly, main event coming at you this week. PlaceBeNation.com. Be sure to pay attention to and vote in the greatest wrestling themed tournament. Otherwise, everyone take care. We'll talk in a couple weeks. Fratella, wobble it in with fucking Butch. That's a send in the clowns, please.
I couldn't tell him. Why are you laughing? I just never mind.
Send in the scoliosis. The